From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 22nd day of June, 2017. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. A bit later in the program, Matt Bennett will be here, Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois, to take a look at the cash grain side of the marketplace. And along the way, we'll catch up again with Laura Christensen. We talked with her yesterday at the Dudley Smith Farm in Christian County. Today, a bit more in depth on wood chip bioreactors. This is something a producer or a landowner can put at the end of the tile line to help take nitrates out of the water before it hits any local stream. And we'll do all of that right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Thursday afternoon. As usual, we're joined by Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. I hear that you arrived back home and you've been mowing the lawn for a while now. Dan, how are things down there?
Well, crop-wise, we're in good shape. We got plenty of moisture, and as a rule, it is cooler than normal. This is the time of year that it's not uncommon to be in this 95 to 102 range. And we've been kind of messing around in the upper 80s and low 90s. And, of course, we are going to get some rain here from that tropical disturbance that is moving into the Gulf. We're going to get a little bit. We're far enough east in Texas that we're going to get some rain on and off for the next few days. But all in all, it's driving down from Illinois. The crops look generally good from what I could see. Now, I ain't going to say we got a bumper crop out there, but things looked probably better driving home after spending 3 weeks in Illinois than what they looked like when I was driving up to Illinois on Memorial Day weekend. So, and I think that's kind of being reflected, you know, in the price action of what we're seeing in the market. It's not that the crop is great. It's for the time being, I think the trade has taken the position. The crop is good enough for now. We're getting a lot of competition from South America's big crop now is starting to take its toll on U.S. export demand. So we kind of got the combination of the bearishness of both sides. We don't have a threatening weather pattern, and we're getting stiff competition out of Brazil. And that, I think, is what's, you know, putting most of the downward pressure in the market that we've experienced over the past week or so.
Pretty rough day for the soybeans today. Rough week as well. Looks like it will be an outside down week unless there's a pretty substantial rally tomorrow. Where do we stand technically with
well,
that
new
crop?
Lows for the year in June is not necessarily a good omen. Today we really took it on the chin technically. Now, that doesn't mean that things can't change. I mean, everything is still pretty much dependent upon August weather. The trade is probably positioning itself for some larger soybean acres, maybe in that June report that's closing in on us here and then fairly quickly. And then the demand factor, demand for beans have been very, very stout. Now we're starting to feel the consequences of the big crop coming out of South America. So technically, new lows in November beans for the year is not good. It's in that same way the way the corn market's acting. Seasonally, the market kind of did what it should do, is make June highs. And we did that in the first week of June, and now we're tailing to the downside. So seasonally, the market is somewhat correct by coming up and making June highs. About half of our highs in corn and soybeans are made during June and July. A lot of it depends upon the growing season, and a lot of it depends upon, you know, what kind of carryover numbers we're looking at. And given that we're looking at fairly hefty carryover numbers compared to more recent years, as soon as that hot weather, that hot and dry pattern that we had there in late May and early June broke, and it went into not everybody got a good rain. Some people still are still hunting for rain, but a large portion of the growing region did get some moisture. The temperatures have cooled off, so the crop is not really terribly under stress. If not, in some areas, it's growing quite nicely. And that is, and like I said, this type of action is not technically supportive toward anything this time of year, because if the trade was really concerned about the market size or the production number, we would be rallying or strengthening as we go on into the first part of July, but that is not the case this year. The first day of summer has come and gone, and it looks to me like the dominant weather pattern or the default mode for the growing season is going to be kind of cool and dry. That doesn't mean that we're not going to get a rain. It doesn't mean that we're not going to see a few days of some higher temperatures, but I think the overall dominant pattern is going to stay cool, and the moisture levels will probably be more on the below normal type side. I mean, that's my best guess as an amateur weather forecaster, just looking at sunspot cycles and whatnot. And I think that's kind of where the trade's at. It's hard for me to say this, but right now the trade kind of believes that everything is good enough for now, and we'll see what if the rains come and the crop doesn't come under stress, it's going to be hard for the market to rally, especially with the inventory of old crop corn that's probably still held by farmers. I do believe, though, a lot of farmers did take advantage of that June rally, but there's a ton of July basis contracts that probably need to be rolled into September or cashed out. I think the market knows all that. I mean, grain elevator managers talk to one another, and there's plenty of that out there. The other thing is that until we get these July options expired here by Friday, it's going to be hard at the market. The guys that are all short calls are making their money. Now, once we get these options expired, maybe the market can kind of stabilize next week, and we would definitely be ripe to have some kind of recovery rally, maybe going into the June acreage and stocks report, just in case USDA would throw the trade a surprise or two in that report.
Is there much downside risk, do you suppose, in either the corn or the soybeans at this time?
Well, I think 350 corn is probably probably pretty solid for now. It will depend upon what size of crop we raise. I think it'll depend upon how many acres we lost, if we lost any, and that's going to show up in the June report. Beans, if the acres are as large as they are, and if summer growing season goes fairly well, yeah, there is downside risk. I mean, we'll just have to take the weather season. Like I said, we still may be worried about early frost yet before it's over with. But if you assume weather conditions stay generally normal, the crop is going to be big enough that that the end user is not going to have to worry about not having a supply of grain to buy. And as long as the end user doesn't worry about buying an inventory of grain, they can pretty well sit on the sidelines. It's only when they fear that supplies are shortening up and they may have to pay higher prices later, that's when they start coming in the market. right now, I think they're comfortably with the crop prospects and with the large inventories basically coming out of South America.
Hey, thanks, Dan. Dan Zwicker, of course. This was Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. In today's agricultural news, the House is prepared to unveil its long-awaited budget resolution this week, and it will set spending levels at $511 billion for domestic programs and $621 billion for defense. Compared to current law, the tentative agreement reached Wednesday would amount to a $72 billion boost for defense and a $4 billion cut for domestic spending. Perhaps most important for agriculture, the budget is expected to call for a $150 billion cut to mandatory programs over 10 years, a bucketful of cuts that could very well impact programs like food stamps or crop insurance, though much remains to be determined. The cuts, which during negotiations earlier in this week were also reportedly targeting agricultural payments, would be made through budget reconciliation to avoid the Senate's filibuster. "We'd like to mark up next week, next Wednesday," says Budget Committee member Tom Kolb. He's a Republican of Oklahoma, acknowledging the committee still has a few I's to dot and T's to cross. Well, there's certainly been no shortage of political jockeying over the budgetary process, which has been fraught with disagreement in the Republican caucus. House Agriculture Chairman Mike Conaway has been a bulwark for farmers, consistently refusing to raid ag programs. Asked this week about the potential to cuts for agriculture, which would likely mean reductions to food stamps and farm subsidies, Conaway seemed peeved that details of House Budget Chairwoman Diane Black's proposal had already made it into the press. "I'm going to continue to talk to the Budget Committee to try to get her reasonable accommodation of what they're trying to get done," he said. "Once they put out an official statement, I'll respond officially." But this leaking of information to try to run ideas up the flagpole is not the best way to run things. Well, yesterday I told you about Dicamba and the Arkansas State Plant Board. Well, they've got a do-over. The board is set to hold a redo vote tomorrow on whether to ban use of Dicamba in the state after questions were raised over Tuesday's 8-6 vote. That tally fell short of the 9 votes officials thought were needed for passage. However, since one voting member was absent, the Arkansas Department of Agriculture notified the board that the vote should have carried with 8 ayes. The board is set to meet again at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning. The proposed ban follows 207 complaints, up from 135 on Tuesday, from farmers across the state who say their crops have been damaged by increased use of broad-spectrum pesticides on nearby fields that have been planted with Monsanto's Roundup Ready Xtend cotton and soybeans, which are resistant to both dicamba and glyphosate. And finally today, a little something from last night's rally in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. The president, Donald Trump, told the crowd that was gathered there that he's saving ethanol. Trump made the remarks Wednesday night after spending time at Kirkwood Community College, where his visit focused on agricultural technology. Just prior to being sworn in as president in January, Trump was calling for the ethanol mandate to match the law set by Congress under the Renewable Fuel Standard. On the 17th of January, Trump spoke at an Iowa Renewable Fuels Association event, saying the EPA should ensure that biofuel blend levels match the statutory levels set by Congress. It looks like EPA is going to wait maybe until next week, as opposed to this week, to actually make their announcement as to whether they're going to follow through on that. Nonetheless, the president told the folks gathered in Cedar Rapids last night that he saved ethanol.
"By the way, we're saving your ethanol industries in the state of Iowa, just like I promised I would do in my campaign. And believe me, they are under siege, folks. I don't know if you know it, but they are under siege."
Again, OPIS Biofuels reported this week that the Trump administration seems to be delaying the reveal of the 2018 RFS targets until next week, pending a new review requested by Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Scott Pruitt. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. With the Dudley Smith Farm in Illinois is tiled and wired. Farmers gathered this week for a peek at the nitrogen loss control methods installed in Christian County. It's a farm that rolls just a bit, but it's pretty typical for the area other than the pastures on a portion of it. They came to hear from Laura Christensen. She's a University of Illinois crop scientist.
At the Dudley Smith Farm, we have a wood chip bioreactor installed. A wood chip bioreactor is a little mini water treatment plant to clean nitrate out of tile drainage. And the thing that makes the Dudley Smith bioreactor different is that it has baffles inside it. So rather than the water just running straight through the wood chips, like most bioreactors, this bioreactor has water that moves in more of an S shape to improve how much nitrate is taken out of the drainage water.
Early indications are the baffles working as hoped. Wood chip bioreactors, even without the baffles, can remove between 20 and 40% of the annual nitrate load from a tile line. It's technology farmers are interested in seeing and hopefully, says Christensen, deploying.
I think farmers are interested in wood chip bioreactors because it's something that they can do that doesn't impact their production practices. It's an edge of field practice, so you can keep it on in the field. How you're comfortable, but then this can be at the edge of your field, just catching any of that nitrate before it goes downstream.
The bioreactor is pretty simple to build. Use a backhoe to make a trench near the end of the tile, put a plastic liner in the trench, fill it with wood chips, be sure to have a control structure on the inlet and the outlet, and cover it with dirt. The chips will need to be replaced about every 10 years. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois, now here to take a look at the agricultural cash grain market. It's been kind of a rough day, Matt, for the soybeans.
Yeah, I'd say today was kind of a beans got donkey punch today, Jiminy Christmas. It was, we're holding on to $9 for dear life at this point, it looks like, on the no beans, whereas, like I was telling a few guys earlier, I wonder how many guys that were reluctant to sell at 10 or, still be reluctant at 9. I'm not saying the market is completely over with, because I think, we do have some agronomic issues with the bean crop as well. But it doesn't look very good at this point. I think most of the people you talk to are in fair agreement. There's a lot of bean acres out there. So, we can take a few agronomic issues and still, not necessarily be terribly worried about supply, just simply the fact that we've got so many acres.
There's just an awful lot of supply left over from last year, a lot of big acreage from this year. We've got the June 30th report coming out next week. Do you think there will be a switch or a change in those acreage? Will they go up for soybeans?
I think overall we've got to be looking at somewhere in that 180 range still is where I'm at for total acreage. I feel like there will be a few more bean acres than corn acres. I don't think it's going to be a large switch. I think that it's fair to say that due to the timing of some of the weather events that we had, that we could certainly expect some acres would have been switched. We do know a lot of folks had to replant a ton of corn more than once, and I know that there were some give-up points for a few producers. I don't hear mass amounts of it in any one area, but I hear several producers in several areas, and so that adds up pretty quickly. And I would say over 90 on bean acres and corn acres, probably in that 89.5 range.
Hey, thanks so much for taking the time with us. Be careful out there in the fields this week. Appreciate it.
Yep, thanks, Todd.
Matt Bennett is with Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. Now let's turn our attention to the weather and what's been happening across the nation. Mike Tenora is here. He's with T-Storm out of Chicago, Illinois. Mike, why don't you get right into it, please?
Well, we have two different features that are going to affect the Corn Belt and Delta. The first one is a strong cool front that's approaching from the west. And the second feature is the remnant of Tropical Storm Cindy, which is going to move into the Delta and far southern Corn Belt. These two systems move through over the next 2 days, and that will produce areas of rain and thunderstorms. Heaviest rainfall is most likely to fall across the northern third of the Corn Belt, across the Delta, and then across the far southeast Corn Belt. So that leaves a swath here from Kansas through Missouri into parts of Illinois and Indiana and Michigan in a little bit of a dry slot. And what that will end up doing in the end is bring some areas some needed rainfall, but end up missing others.
And then I see cooler temperatures are coming too.
Well, it will turn much cooler than normal over the next few days, and then coolness lasts about five days. So it will be unseasonably cool this weekend and over the first half of next week. It will also be dry during that period, and that's why we think the rainfall over the next 2 days is somewhat important. As hard as this might be to believe, if you look at rainfall over the last 30 days and weight it by U.S. corn production, the proportion that was drier than normal over the last 30 days is the highest in June since the drought of 2012. That just is happening because even though we've seen some rains here and there, we've only really seen one or two rains over the last 30 days. You need more than that to keep up with normal rainfall levels and subsoil moisture levels, and that's why at this point we still need some more rain, and that would bring us into what happens after this cool period.
And then what does happen?
Well, we think there is going to be rain. It will turn a lot warmer from west to east over Tuesday to Thursday of next week. We'll even start to see some heat build back into Nebraska and Kansas. The main uncertainty regards how warm does it get, and also will we see waves of energy that could trigger thunderstorms along with this heat? A number of signs say the answer to that question is yes. The jet stream has been pretty strong here over the last 10 days, and it looks like it's going to remain strong. If you combine a strong jet stream with warm and muggy air, that's a good combination to produce thunderstorm clusters. We're not exactly sure where the thunderstorm clusters will locate, but the most likely place for them to be would be in the Corn Belt. So we think that most corn and soybeans are going to receive at least one or two significant rains within June 28th to July 5th. So we'll close out the month with some rain, and we'll start out July with some rain. But even July 5th is only 2 weeks into the future, so it's difficult to say what would happen after that. Certainly rain at this time of the year is what corn and soybeans want and need, but it really matters what happens later in July and in August. So there's still time for it to dry out or turn even wetter, but at least in the near term, it does look a little bit wetter from rains again the next 2 days, and then starting up again in about a week.
Hey, thanks for the update.
You're welcome, Todd.
That, of course, Mike Tenora. He's with T-Storm Weather out of Chicago. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Medium. You can listen to him again if you'd like on our website. The address there is willag.org. I'm Todd Gleason.